Good afternoon, everybody. I am a grateful addict named Joe B. And I'm truly grateful that I have the opportunity to be here today. This is a serene heart. At 9 years clean, he was diagnosed with depression and schizophrenia, diseases he continues to treat with medication and therapy. This addict learned that while mental illness is an outside issue in NA, dealing with it in his personal recovery is very much an inside issue for him. A serene heart. I am a grateful recovering addict who recently celebrated 25 years clean through NA and the grace of God, and I live with the mental illnesses of severe depression and schizophrenia. And yes, I've been blessed with a very fulfilling life. I have noticed that many people who readily admit they are addicts can't admit that they struggle with their mental health. There are different levels of stigma attached to addiction and mental illness. I understand the fear of admitting something unpleasant. After all, as an NA member, I had to squarely face my fears when I first owned up to being powerless over my addiction in step one. Later in my recovery, I learned that mental illness is not something that can be hidden away or minimized. I have to be honest and I have to admit it and out of the rooms. Fortunately, the paths of NA recovery are many. For those who live with permanent debilitating diseases in recovery, I hope my story will help courage blossom within you. My earliest memories are of continual abuse and yelling with frequent visits to the hospital. I behaved differently from what was normal and was diagnosed with mentally retarded and hyperactive. Consequently, I was accorded the kind of upbringing prescribed for special children, social isolation, close supervision, and limited stimulation. In grade school, I spent half days in special education programs. But when I was 7, I read an entire encyclopedia in 3 weeks, plus numerous books intended for adults. Suddenly, they decided I wasn't mentally retarded, just very hyperactive. But I still wasn't allowed friends and was kept from activities because of my acting out. Being isolated, I developed a fantasy life. I first used drugs around this time, and using took away the sense of alienation. Drugs allowed me to feel like I belonged to something, even if it was just another fantasy. I smoked weed and I abused my prescriptions to cope with an alcoholic family and a troubled social life. Not having friends at school, I felt like it was always them and me, the abnormal kid. I ran away from home at 12, beginning a cycle of living on the streets and in communes. The first time I overdosed, I was 14. Later, I robbed a convenience store at gunpoint for a book of matches. I knew I was crazy, and the drugs made it okay. Sorry. The fun times were over by the time I was 15. Sleeping in dumpsters, freezing in garages, constant starvation, and self-abuse accompanied by my drug addiction. I drifted it from one group to another. I was constantly haunted by the feeling that I was different from other people, that I was an alien walking among other earthlings. I looked for companionship in psych units and rehabs, but no girl would have anything to do with me. I certainly wasn't the high school dating type. I wanted to be loved, but I tried to believe that using drugs made love unnecessary. I finally hooked up with a girl that I met at a rock concert. using my homelessness as an excuse to move in with her family, I ripped off her parents and we took off for the streets. By that time, I was overdosing every few weeks. One of those times I was hospitalized and she left. Feeling doomed, I tried to kill myself in a variety of ways. Finally, I overdosed into a coma. At the hospital, they didn't know who I was. I had no idea. I was found dying in an alley somewhere. The doctors told me afterwards that the coma was the kind of people usually don't wake up from. No one had visited me. No one cared. Full force, I felt the total emptiness in the heart that comes from addiction. I had nothing for a life. I couldn't even remember my name. At this point, I was most hopeless. I was graced with the awareness that I wouldn't have to feel this way again if I did everything in my power to stay clean. I went to AA, and there I ran into the only NA member in my community. When he explained NA recovery to me, something clicked. Nothing else had worked for me, whether I was sincere or not. Could it be that I was just around the kind of people who could really understand me? Together, we started a meeting. By example, he taught me the value of being dedicated to my personal recovery and to NA. We'd drive hundreds of miles to support fellow addicts in other communities. I wrote out the steps and practically lived and breathed recovery. I had absolute faith in Narcotics Anonymous. I strongly believed I would be transformed into a better human being if I followed the path of recovery. By that time, I had 90 days clean. I had started several meetings and was sponsoring newer members. Miracles happened. The spiritual awakening described in step 12 manifested in my life. I knew what it meant to be spiritually awake, and I could live it. Not only did I stay clean, I lost the desire to use drugs or even behave like an addict. Addict behaviors were distasteful and spiritually empty as using drugs. Never having worked before, I was able to hold down a job at a treatment center. Starting off as a counselor, I quickly became an administrator. I served on service boards in and out of NA. God blessed me with leadership abilities, and I was filled with willingness to be of loving service. I went to 90 meetings in 90 days, every 90 days. Learning consistency this way, I was able to discover and cultivate my talents on behalf of the fellowship and in my personal life. Daily prayer and meditation brought balance in my life. I could have an intense conviction, but convey myself to others with gentleness. I experienced love for the first time, the deep love for human beings that comes from a soul that is serene. By the time I had 8 years clean, I had a life that I could only have dreamed about. Not that I did it alone, of course. I had the assets that come from NA recovery, a higher power, the experience of my fellow addicts, and the strength of their recovery. Years of prayer and meditation were rewarded with a genuine conscious contact with God and the awareness that I was participating in my higher power's plan. I had earned the respect of my fellow NA members and the community. I even had a soulmate, a wonderful lady who was clean in NA. I was living life rather than just surviving. But life changed. Over the next couple of years, I endured many dark days. My wife dropped out of NA, started sleeping around, and eventually relapsed. I quit my job. In the midst of this instability, I was still asked to serve on NA service projects. My first thought many mornings was, I can't handle it. I want to kill myself. But I kept showing up, assuming that this was normal for someone who had just lost so much. In meetings, I had heard NA members share about facing extreme emotional pain and surviving. I decided I would just ride it out, but it started getting weird. The depression didn't go away. Instead, it got much worse. I heard voices and I saw people who weren't there. I knew I wasn't using drugs, but I was hallucinating. In less than a year, I went from living in a 6-bedroom house to being homeless. I couldn't even hold down a menial job. I had to sell blood to get food. I would spend days sitting in a chair, doing nothing, feeling nothing. At meetings, I struggled to find words to share what was going on with me. I was sleeping on NA members' couches and floors. Several loving NA members confronted me with the fact that I wasn't myself and insisted that I see a psychiatrist. Recalling my childhood experiences, I recoiled at the idea. When I wouldn't go, they took me to the hospital. The medical team said I was severely depressed and schizophrenic and prescribed medication. But I refused to take the meds because I didn't want a mood-altering drug in me. And besides, hadn't I been well for 9 years of recovery? But my heart kept becoming more distant. That dreaded total emptiness that I had felt when I was beaten down by addiction, it came back. Once again, I felt alienated, hopeless, useless, and worthless. And I wasn't using drugs. Doctor after doctor told me I was mentally ill, the illness was disabling, and that it was something that I'd have to live with for the rest of my life. I felt a deeper sense of defeat when I first admitted I was an addict. What had I done to deserve this? Why did God allow this to happen to me? Hadn't I lived the principles? Hadn't I done everything one is supposed to do in NA? Aren't good people supposed to have good lives? Even more frightening was the uncertainty about the future. With drug addiction, NA is a proven way and out of the hell of using. But with a mental illness, what kind of recovery would there be? How could I live the rest of my days clean with the many losses that result from mental illness? There was no hiding my problems, and there was no solution in sight. I felt that my life was utterly ruined. How could I face the fellowship? The confusion I felt inside was mirrored by how others responded to me. Some told me that I wasn't clean because I was taking meds. The same people who intervened to get me psychiatric help later accused me of getting disability benefits dishonestly. Others blamed my mental problems on too much service work or never having worked in an honest fourth step. Many men I sponsored decided not to work steps with me anymore. Other NA members said I was faking my illness. Fortunately, my sponsor was a very loving presence through all of this. Other NA members kept encouraging me, reminding me that NA just isn't just about people, it's about principles. At times, I could feel the highest power in my life reminding me that I was loved, mental illness or not. Despite all the pain, the fellowship buoyed me with enough wisdom and caring to help me through this very difficult period. Some of the most precious wisdom in my recovery is born out of my ignorance. Through the initial year or two of living clean with a mental illness, I learned a valuable lesson. Mental illness is an outside issue in NA, but how I deal with it in my personal recovery is very much an inside issue. 10th and 11th step journaling was critical in helping me get a grasp on where my recovery ended and my mental illness began. I had to make distinction in order to stay clean. I learned that struggles with recovery never put me in a hospital and that addicts aren't psychologists or psychiatrists unless they have a PhD after their name. When I first got clean, I had to learn how to explain addiction to people who had no experience using drugs while also learning how to make sense of my addiction internally. The only way I could do this was to work the steps and learn what addiction and recovery really were. Now I had to explain mental illness to NA members who had strong misconceptions about it. I had to rely on the steps to learn about my mental illness and how to live with it clean. Accepting the losses brought about by mental illness has been an ongoing challenge. At one point, I was in a locked psychiatric unit, and some NA members were bringing an H&I meeting, but I wasn't allowed to go because I wasn't considered stable enough. The only thing separating me from an NA meeting and a 16-year chip was a locked door. In a very real sense, this is what it's like to live with a severe illness and recovery. Ongoing illnesses shut the door on possibilities, but I need to deal with it with spiritual maturity so I can enjoy emotional stability. I can't compare myself with other NA members. During the 16 years I've lived with mental illness, I've never dated, rarely worked, and sometimes lived in abject poverty. I have been hospitalized numerous times and have spent days, weeks, and months emotionally paralyzed and homebound. There have been long periods of time when the only thing I could do was go to a meeting, and times when I couldn't go at all. When I'm in a heavy episode, I can't even pray or meditate. I can work the steps until I'm blue in the face, and the mental illness won't go away. When I feel that I'm beyond hope, it's difficult to reach out to others, but I'm continually reminded that I don't have to walk this walk alone. Understanding why some days are better than others is like knowing why I caught a cold last week instead of this week. In recovery from addiction, there are no guarantees except that I'll stay clean when I live clean. When I work the steps, I don't follow a plan. I've learned that the plan will fall into place when I keep moving forward in recovery. That's why it's important to me to keep working the steps so more can be revealed. The same is true with mental illness. Medication isn't a guarantee that I'll feel better. Therapy is a good tool, but understanding my illness doesn't make it go away. I've learned to apply those tools to the mental illness and NA principles to my addiction. In NA's traditions, I'm told that the principles come before personalities. But what comes before principles? What gives an addict the strength and courage to live by the principles when recovery doesn't make sense? Why stay clean when it's impossible at times to feel the joy of recovery? I believe that the loving God described in tradition 2 that manifests in our group conscience, as well as in our service work, our fellowshipping, our work, and our play, is the same God that strengthens my personal recovery so I can live within the principles. Given the reality that I will face severe illness each day and still being able to stay clean, that's an incredible miracle. Spiritually, I'm in a state of grace. I don't always feel it, but it's always there. I should have died many times over when I was using. Now I live with another disease, equally painful, equally life-threatening. I know many people in and out of NA who have killed themselves because of mental illness. I'm not going to be one of them. It's not an easy path, but I know that I'm alive because NA has blessed me with a clean life. Recovery makes it possible for me to treasure the moments when I have a serene heart and to be grateful for the miracles, large and small, happening all around me.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Joe. Next time, we're going to pass the meeting over to Kevin. Awesome.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for reading that, Joe. I'm a grateful recovering addict, Kevin. It's a real honor to, and it's humbling, you know, to listen to other basic text authors, read their stories, and, you know, every share was just like, you know, hitting a home run. you know, I could see myself in those chairs and I could feel the intensity of recovery and a desire to stay clean and a spirituality and a lot of that kind of stuff, you know. And I'm really grateful to be part of this. I'm glad, you know, Francis and Wade and Archer and a few others took the initiative to get this going, you know, Paradise Strong. And it kind of reminds me too that paradise is wherever you live. I mean, right now I'm in Iowa, the temperature's 5 below, the wind chill's 20 below. And I spent 23 years in Hawaii. And so, you know, it's like, I still have that thin skin that I got when I was in Hawaii, you know, and the cold really affects me. But, you know, where I was and where it is now, you know, it was like 15 years ago, I wrote the story. And the story about the story is that a lot of people wrote about mental illness. And in their story, they said that, you know, when they got clean, you know, the mental illness went away. And a lot of us know that in, you know, active addiction, you know, there are a lot of symptoms that are the quote unquote mental illness type symptoms, you know, paranoia, sociopathy, sociophobia, isolation, obsessive compulsive behavior. And for some people that goes away, you know, when the drugs go away, it's part of the recovery process, but for others it doesn't. And, you know, for me, you know, I was asked to write a story by some folks because I was still struggling with mental illness and I was still struggling with depression and I was still struggling with schizophrenia and taking medication, doing therapy, but yet I was still clean. And so the beauty of that was that I submitted a story. When then, you know, the call for stories came out, I didn't submit a story because I thought, you know, why should I do that? I mean, there's nothing special about me. I've got the same kind of recovery everybody else has, nothing distinctive or whatever. And then I wrote the story and I got in the basic text and I realized it's in the basic text because I'm just a typical addict. You know, everybody's got their challenges. I have a particular challenge. Any challenge in recovery for me is just a cue for me to get closer to my higher power and the fellowship, you know, so that's, you know, what I continue to do. I continue to take medication. I continue to go to psychotherapy and target areas that of my life that are affected by mental illness. And I'm a strong believer that, taking care of my recovery means taking care of my mental illness. You know, it's something I live with and it's something that's, you know, somewhat treatable, but, and, you know, it's a challenge. If your doctor prescribed you a medication and said that, you know, it would give you headaches, it would give you nausea, it would give you shakes, it would make you impotent, it would take away your libido, and only is effective 60% of the time, would you take it? But that's a trade-off. You know, that me and other folks who live with mental illness and in recovery have to take. And it comes down to, you know, quality of life. You know, I'd rather have that and not have the depression and the schizophrenia where I just live full blown with the schizophrenia and depression. You know, so that's quote unquote taking a bitter pill, you know, but it's a gift and I am blessed. The big change that has happened in the last 15 years is around 2017, I started having some really bad chronic pain. That's why I'm laying down right now. I'm in too much pain to get out of bed. And it got worse. And, you know, I went and had some x-rays and had a bunch of cracked vertebrae, and scoliosis and severe arthritis. And it's not treatable. You know, the equivalent would be, you know, like, you know, stepping on a nail. And after a week, the pain goes away. But with what I have, the pain doesn't go away. I mean, there's nothing I can do. I could take muscle relaxers, anti-inflammatories, anti-spasmodics, and it'll reduce the pain. But, you know, at times I have bad days like yesterday and today where I'm just totally crippled up. And that feeds into, you know, that's depressing just in itself. I mean, one of the things I learned in recovery was, you know, for me, there's two types of depression. There's situational depression that comes, you know, let's say I go through a breakup or I lose a job or someone close to me dies or, you know, a member that I love that I'm grateful and blessed with sponsorship relapses. And it's a bummer. you know, but there's also the mental illness or the clinical depression that comes, and there's not really a source in it. You know, addiction is a disease of separation, and for me, depression is a disease of suppression. My feelings are suppressed. I only feel doom, and sometimes I don't feel anything but just a numbness. I have low-grade depression at times where, you know, I just don't have the energy to do anything. You know, I just sit in a chair and, you know, it's like turning on the TV or cooking a meal. It's just too challenging. And other times I have out-and-out depression where I wind up in the hospital. I was hospitalized 5 times last year, you know, for mental illness-related stuff, you know, for like 2 or 3 days at a time till I can learn to wear my head again. Yeah, I think about it is that when I go through that depression type stuff, you know, I come back to the rooms and I feel like I've relapsed, even though I haven't done any drugs. It's just, you know, it put a halt to my recovery, and it's really hard to deal with at times. But, you know, I made a promise to myself and to the fellowship that, you know, I'm going to stay clean. I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not going to take any of those outs. I'm going to face this head on. And, with courage and with the strength of the fellowship, I've learned with the chronic pain, especially, you know, I've learned that I really need to rely on other people in NA, you know, for assistance. I mean, you know, putting a gallon of milk in the refrigerator can be excruciatingly painful at times. And then my head gets into that place where it's like, you know, is this all there is? You know, why is this happening? And I get in that place where it's like, life's not living anymore. It's not worth living. You know, there's no shut off valve for this. Just like at times when I go through a heavy mental illness type depression or schizophrenic episode, you know, I can't just think myself out of it, or I can't just take a pill and all of a sudden it's better. You know, it goes away on its own, you know, but, you know, this may sound like some real downer stuff, but actually it's a blessing and it's a gift. Because what has happened in the last 15 years since my story was in the basic text is I've gotten a very powerful connection with my higher power. I mean, I continually work steps and, you know, that decision of faith in step 3, you know, make a decision becomes a decision of trust, you know, and it's like, you know, I walk in the woods and I can't see the sun because everything's shadowed by the trees. I know the sun's there, you know, it's not a faith thing. It's like, I know it's there. And then when I walk out into the meadow and the sun's overhead and the grass is all blowing in the wind, you know, it's like, yeah, there it is. And that in a way describes my relationship with my higher power now for many years, you know, I've learned to delimit God, you know, and not, you know, put a lot of limits on God and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I maintain a meditation practice, you know, it's usually an hour to an hour and a half, you know, early when I wake up. And that gets me through my day. But, you know, sometimes it sucks. You know, it's like my reality is that, you know, I wake up, I lay down like I am now and pray and meditate because I can't sit, you know, for an hour and a half on a meditation mat. Then I get up, and then every day when I get up out of bed, I scream in pain. You know, that's my reality, you know, and that's, you know, I have to work up courage sometimes to do that because I know I'm going to get a slam with excruciating pain, but, you know, I do it anyway. Despite all that, I still do service. I still, you know, I am blessed to have some really good sponsees. I moved from Hawaii to Iowa prompted by my higher power, you know, and when people ask me, why did you move, you know, from paradise to, you know, the frigid north, you know, I say, well, God wanted me to. And what happened was that, you know, later on, I realized I moved here to be an old timer for the old timers. I mean, I'm coming up on 40 years clean. So I've been around the block a couple times, you know, and, you know, I've been blessed all along the way, you know, with so many people that, you know, they aren't here now, but, you know, they left something with me. You know, so here I am, you know, with this clean time and, you know, I'm still facing the same stuff that's in my story. I mean, there's some days, you know, where all that pain that I felt when I got beaten down by addiction and I knew I was, my soul had been crushed by it, you know, it comes back with the depression. And the difference is that, you know, I can't just dose myself with whatever to try and get out of it. You know, I need to embrace it, endure it, and go through it. And and every time I've done that, I'm really blessed to be part of this quote unquote select group of folks who are, you know, basic text authors. You know, I mean, I remember, you know, the pre-basic text days where we're reading stories out of the AA book and substituting, you know, drugs for booze. Instead of bottle of booze, it was a bottle of pills. And instead of sobriety, it was recovery and all that. And then the basic text comes out, and, you know, I just barely missed the window to get a story in the basic text. But, you know, I did write some input and it got in there. And, you know, to me, that's God's book. And, you know, I don't, you know, someone now asked me, you know, what part is your part? And it's like, no, you know, it's like a fellowship role with that. And it's, you know, like, it's an anonymity type thing. But, you know, the basic text to me is a gift from the people like us that wrote it to the newer people, or the next generation of addicts. You know, it's like a love letter to them. You know, what we did was we took a jug and dipped it in the ocean of wisdom of Narcotics Anonymous and bottled it up and kept it for people. So, you know, it's available for them. And then, you know, subsequent pieces of literature, you know, Living Clean, you know, for example, is another book that, you know, to me, it's like the basic text for grownups in recovery. And, you know, like someone else was sharing earlier, it's like, okay, you know, I got clean. It's no longer about not using drugs. It's about, you know, how do I get through this situation without acting out in my insanity or acting out of my addiction or, you know, those kind of things. You know, and, you know, now we're working on this really wonderful principle of day book, and I've seen early drafts of that, and it just blows me away, you know, that, you know, the fellowship, again, is working on another book length piece that's going to, you know, it's going to bring more maturity to the fellowship, you know, and it's just really beautiful because, you know, for me, I spent a lot of time walking in the spiritual field of the 11th step, and, you know, I see other people doing that as well. And that just encourages me, you know, it's like, you know, I don't have to just look within myself to see proof of higher power working in my life when I see it in so many ways around other people. One of the things I learned, you know, in the last 15 years is God exists in the unknown, you know, and so the unknown is like not a big fear thing for me anymore. You know, because God's already there. My higher power's already there. So, you know, I'm coming home rather than going away. Anyway, I'm grateful for what I've been given. I'm grateful for what's been taken away. And I love you all. Much love and God bless. Thanks for letting me share.